Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox, my pronouns are he and him, and because there is a small child making themselves a nuisance in the background, I'm going to be introducing the players in reverse alphabetical order.
Hi everyone, my name is Sue Elliott, and my pronouns are she, her.
Sadly, I'm just Nick Bate, my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Ed Tomlinson, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Becky Anderson, and my pronouns are she, her.
Do I need to go and kick someone really hard up the arse?
Are they 12?
They're close enough. You just round in the direction of 12. And we are going to be playing Last Fleet. This is session zero. We're going to be creating characters, setting up the world, and all that stuff, which means I have to do things like explain what the game is and all that kind of thing. Right? Right. Cool. The person who wrote this game is a genius because they've included a section on how to teach the game. Good idea, that person. And it says I should start by talking you through the introduction and a couple of other things. So I'm going to read to you the introduction from the game, all right? So Last Fleet. The human race is fleeing through space from an implacable inhuman foe which seeks nothing less than the complete destruction of humanity. Even now, the enemy are hiding among us, biding their time. You play the brave survivors of a terrible holocaust that has all but wiped out humanity, fleeing on board a handful of surviving ships, searching for a safe haven. Your characters are officers, pilots, engineers, politicians and journalists, striving to keep the flame of humanity alight. You will contend with an inhuman adversary, you will fight to keep the fleet from falling apart, and you will struggle to overcome your own fears and doubts. I'm just going to talk quickly about objectives. So another thing that's slightly different from standard, this is a PBTA game, and unlike some, but possibly even most PBTA games, it includes a set of objectives which apply to both the characters and the GM. So I will read these out as well. The objectives are: bring the characters, the fleet and the war to life. Treat your characters as though they were real people. Commit to the logic of the game world. Seize every opportunity to describe them in vivid detail. That's one objective. Focus the game on action, intrigue and drama. Try to weave a story that is exciting. Adrenaline-soaked action scenes, tense politics and intrigue, gripping interpersonal drama. Lean towards those themes and you'll get the best from the game. That's two objectives. Engage the people around the table. This is a cooperative game. Your characters may be rivals or even enemies, but as players you should be fans of each other's characters. Focus the game on the player characters and drive the game towards what interests and excites your group. That's three. And play to find out what happens. There should be some sort of little sound effect that goes off when somebody says that. Decide what happens in the game moment by moment, responding to and building on what the other people around the table say, what the rules say, and what the dice say. Let yourself be surprised and delighted by what all these unpredictable elements bring to the table. The person who wrote the teaching the game section forgot to mention the safety section. So I'm now going to do the safety section before moving on to... So this is the usual stuff that we do in all of our games. Essentially, the game recommends lines and veils and using something like the X card, which we always use for our games, as well as letting anyone stop play and get up and leave anytime they want to, which I think is quite a good call too. Specific themes that we might want to consider alongside the usual things that we do. So sex and romance is a thing in this game. There is a move called Let Loose, which can lead to characters unexpectedly getting it on. Important, obviously, that shouldn't be used for anything non-consensual. And it says we might want to discuss how comfortable people are with, you know, the sexy element in the game. I can't remember what we generally do. Do we like to fade to black?
Yeah, that's fine. Fine with me if everyone's happy with that.
Yeah, very happy with it being part of the game.
Yep, that's cool.
Super. Then violence. Obviously, it's a major theme of the game. There's a kind of a military science fiction kind of element to it. So I hope everyone's happy with there being violence. And I guess there's a question about how graphic we want to be in describing any violence. So are we all happy? I don't know. Like, I guess I tend to think with violence, keep it at a high level. Don't describe in detail. But we will need to know things like whether you've been injured, and if so, how.
Yeah, I'm not too fussed about, you know, graphic details or outright sadism. But, you know,
If it fits, yeah.
Yeah, if it fits, that's fine.
Yeah. Same for you, Nick. You
yeah, it? Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's less of a concern in this game than the fact of violence, not the detail of the violence, seems to be what's important here.
Cool. There's a separate box, a bullet on interrogation and torture, which says, I don't recommend centering this in your game. Given there's sort of themes around intrigue and paranoia, it's the kind of thing that you could imagine coming up. So it's worth discussing whether we want it and whether we want it on screen or off screen. It also says, I've never met a group that didn't want to ban on screen torture if asked. So, and I can see Nick nodding. So that's.
Okay, here's a question for me on that, though. Like, because of my playbook, I'm just imagining the possibility of a Picard esque scene.
There are four.
Is that too much? Because it's not like. It's not Marathon Man levels of torture.
Are you envisaging yourself being interrogated here?
Potentially.
Yeah.
That sort of scene would be fine by me. If it were important, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we're not doing that every 15 minutes.
It would be a key scene in the storyline, yeah. Right? It wouldn't, like...
To clarify what we mean here, what that is essentially just an interrogation scene without any real physical torture, but with a kind of montaged bit of psychological torture involving gaslighting, basically.
Yeah, so it's a sort of like there is some level of discomfort in order to win, get something. But I'm not really sure. I mean, like the Picard thing is not like they're like rolling out surgical equipment or whatever and being deeply unpleasant about it. It's
like, was it like sleep deprivation?
Yeah, it's that sort of thing, isn't it? It's
yeah,
it's making them uncomfortable enough to crack, if you know what I mean, rather than anything overtly violent.
So I think what I'm hearing is that. If it makes sense in the story, we might have interrogation. There might be off-screen deprivations.
Mm-hmm.
So we might come onto the character, you know, blinking into the light
mm-hmm.
and looking a little the worse for wear, but we won't get into kind of...
The details, yeah. No, that works for me, yeah.
That works for me as well, I think.
I also, I feel like I'd prefer if that were a thing that we weren't comfortable with. Like, the characters were not necessarily comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this is just our routine treatment of prisoners. This is something extreme that is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not casual at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be, and I think, you know, if we are going into that scene, then, you know, we can have the safety conversation again about X-Card or whatever.
Just a quick question about that, because it occurs to me that it might come up, I guess,
mm-hmm.
is how would we feel about an NPC... presumably villainous NPC that is more comfortable with harder interrogation, who very possibly you might want to take down at some point. It's okay to say no.
I mean, I think I'm fine with that. Partially because were it a villainous NPC, it's not something we'd likely be seeing on scene. We might be seeing the consequences of.
No, that's right. There would be rumour and not much
Yeah, else. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's important to make the villains in this game something to be a bit fearful of, but yeah, so...
I'd like to off-screen as much of the torture stuff as possible.
100%.
And if I get to a stage where I'm feeling particularly delicate one evening, I might X-card something.
Yeah, I think that's wise. And I'm not... That theme might or might not come up. It's one of those things where, because there are infiltrators and things, you can't...
Head!
Well, you can rule it out, but... Okay, and then the final theme that's mentioned here is authoritarianism. And I'll just read it out verbatim, I think. It says, since the military are a standard component of the game background, there is the possibility of exploring themes of state oppression. It's a good idea to think about whether to centre this or avoid this issue, since it may affect some of you in real life.
I'm not feeling super like I want to play into a lot of state oppression at the moment. Not since that Met Police report came out today. I'm feeling a little bit sore around the edges, I think, after that.
I would agree with that, I think.
Cool. So I perhaps should have said at the start, this game is fairly closely sailing into the Battlestar Galactica, the more recent Battlestar Galactica, as we record it now. Who knows, there might be more Battlestar Galactica in future. The 2000s Battlestar Galactica, I should say. And that has a military that are, in the circumstances, essentially totalitarian, but also probably 90% of the time seen as fairly benevolent and not creating lots of oppression. There are moments where it gets more difficult, where there's shortages or riots and the command have to decide what to do. Are we saying we want to avoid that 10% outright? It's okay to say yes to that question.
Yeah, I'd quite like to avoid it if we can. I'm just not feeling it at the moment, I think.
Okay.
It won't be the end of my life if we accidentally kind of veer into it, but I don't want to kind of have it as a central theme of play, I don't think, particularly. Accepting, of course, though, that if you're in the military, there's a military hierarchy and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, so we're not saying military's not in here. We're just essentially saying let's avoid putting the story into situations where the military are going to be
suppressing civilians who are rioting because they don't have enough to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
That sort of thing. But if I'm playing a pilot and I'm being a insolent...
If, she says.
Doesn't seem very likely.
If I'm playing an insolent pilot, then I fully expect to get completely brigged every 5 minutes and, you know, all of that other stuff. And I'm totally fine with that.
All right. Nice. Yeah. Any other things to mention in terms of lines and veils? There is a lines and veils section in the Google Doc that I shared earlier. So please do write anything that you want in there and then we'll just review it in a short while. In the meantime, I'm just going to quickly, is it helpful for me to go through the stats and explain what they do?
I'd like a little recap, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's cool. So your stats are raw, as in raw skill, talent or emotion. You use that for fighting. And for reducing pressure by letting loose, which is essentially a move where you go out on the lash or whatever, and usually drama ensues.
Do you need to explain what going out on the lash means to our international audience?
They can Google it, for God's sake. yeah?
That feels like quite a Britishism.
It's definitely not an Australianism.
So it means to go out and get drunk.
It's called a lasho in Australia.
Yes, it is. They get drunko.
Yeah.
Actually, this move can be used for taking drugs, getting into fights.
Ah, so you mean getting munted?
Getting munted. Any
getting
kind
munted.
Of, no, any God. Kind of out of control joviality.
It's a very late 90s term.
Yeah, I haven't heard that for ages. Oh, my Lord.
Right, I'm going to carry on with the stats before you guys go any further with that. We got hard, as in she is one hard woman, which is used for resisting threats and harm and putting social and emotional pressure on other people. There are particular moves, but I'm not going to name them all. Then there's sharp, as in smart or perceptive, which is used for investigation and for interfering with other characters' moves. There is smooth, as in charming or socially skilled, which is used for deception, covering things up. Some people might find that useful. Ed. And there's a particular move called pull strings, which is used for kind of getting what you want through influencing other people on the fleet or asking other people for help, and that falls under smooth. And then finally, there is warm, as in loving and supportive, which is used for reducing pressure by making human connections and for helping other characters' moves. Right, having said that we're going to choose playbooks, I actually just wanted to quickly talk about the setting. Basically, our options in this game, there are two settings included in the book. One of them is called the Korax and Commonwealth setting. It's the standard setting for the game. Essentially, there used to be a kind of vaguely, I guess, EU-like federation of planets that had evolved from a trading bloc into something a bit more government-y. And then it got taken down when the Korax, an interdimensional fungus entity, invaded and messed everything up. And now everybody's dead except you. That's setting A. Setting B is a kind of mythic Greeks in space.
There's a nod to Ulysses, isn't there? Ulysses 3000.
Yeah. You're being pursued by the god of death. It's quite cool and evocative. I like it. If we were going to do one of the two settings out of the box, I'd prefer to do the standard one, or we can create our own setting. That will take some time.
I'd be very happy to go with the standard Korax setting out of the box.
I was going to say the same.
But I really do want to play the other setting at some point in the future.
I kind of do myself, I have to say. I never have, but it does look pretty cool, doesn't it? Maybe we'll just have to do another run of this at some point. Okay, cool. Well, I've given you the basic rundown of the setting in that case. I'll just quickly mention, because there is some stuff in here that we might use, I'll just like run over the headings. So, number one, culture. The Commonwealth, as it existed, was made up of several different planets. And so if you want to, you can bring in cultural differences and rivalries, because these planets are all kind of notionally independent from each other. There are three main planets: Nin Mahon, which is a world of bustling metropolises and spreading agricultural hinterlands with educated and wealthy people compared to the rest of the Commonwealth, and they are resented for it. Ishkuria, a cold and bleak planet rich in minerals and supplier of many of the Commonwealth's commodities. It has a proud martial and hunting heritage and tends to be looked down upon by the other planets. And Nergalos, a verdant planet with vast oceans, whose people are deeply religious but also renowned for mercantile cunning, known for their pilots and navigators. So I'm just telling you that. It's in the book. In case you feel like centering those things, I think there's some quite cool politics there potentially. There's a few factions listed in the book. The Red Temple are the main Commonwealth religion. The temple believe that humanity will rise to greatness in the fires of a catastrophe called the Remaking, and many of them believe that the Korax incursion might be the Remaking. Then we've got Unity, a political party dedicated to a more egalitarian order, and they have a particularly popular on Ishkuria. They have a paramilitary wing called the Unifiers, although they deny any connection with them. And then finally, the Nexus, who are a network of criminals and black marketeers who have cells operating in the fleet. That'll do, I think. That's just enough to kind of give you a sense of any politics you might want to connect your characters into.
What was that first one? The red?
The Red Temple.
The Red Temple.
You can also make up any other little bits and bobs. It's a customizable setting rather than a sprawling hard canon sort of a setting. Now then, I could read out all the playbooks, but I think you've all chosen them anyway. So do you want to, like, say which playbook you've chosen and read out the blurb from your playbook?
Absolutely.
Well, I can go first, if you like, because I think I picked mine fairly early on.
Do it, Ed.
Sure. Okay.
Scorpio.
This is my surprised face.
What, you thought that was what I was going to pick?
Battle Gemini.
I might have picked Nice People.
I thought you were going to pick Gemini.
Gemini was definitely on the list, yeah. Shall I read the blurb? The blurby bit. Something's wrong. Maybe you woke up from a bad dream only to find that the things you did weren't a fantasy at all. Maybe you feel a strange fascination for the enemy. You're not sure who you really are, or if you can trust yourself. Luckily, you're good at hiding it. If anyone else suspected, it could land you in the brig or the airlock. So note, playing Scorpio means that some part of you is secretly working against the fleet. But that does not mean you're a villain. You're a player. Just remember that, guys. But that does not mean you're a villain. Just say it again. You are playing the part of you that is on the humanity side. The enemy agent may come out and do bad things, but afterwards you regain control and continue to fight for humanity.
Who's next?
I can go next if we want to leave Sue till last.
Yeah, I mean, let's add some drama.
So, it will surprise no one to learn that I have picked Aries.
Again.
What? What did you say?
Oh, man, maybe I should have chosen Gemini if everyone thought that was one I was going to pick.
No, I always feel sad if somebody doesn't pick Scorpio, because it's my fave.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, we're talking about my fave right now. My fave is Aries.
Sorry, yeah. Something pilot.
Something. Maybe. You're a creature of passion. Whether it's work or play, you throw yourself into it with a lack of restraint that can often get you into trouble. You'll go where angels fear to tread and cross the lines that others balk at. And I might be angling to be a pilot. Just saying.
Super.
The least cliffhanger of all the cliffhangers. More like a step, really.
I have my niche and I know how to fill it.
Nothing wrong with that. So I was thinking about playing the Leo, and my partner took one look at the art associated with the Leo playbook and said that I wasn't nearly cool enough for that. So instead I'm playing the Taurus.
What?
100% cool enough.
Listener, if you have the rule book, just take a look. I'm not that cool.
You're a brilliant role player.
Oh, come on, Nick.
I believe that you could.
This is exactly what role play is for.
No, actually, I'm playing a Taurus because I love the Taurus. So, selfless, principled, and tough as nails, you're willing to put yourself in harm's way to protect others or to do what's right. Let the enemy dish out whatever punishment they like. You can take it. Let those of lesser beliefs try to knock you off course. You're unstoppable.
Nice.
Aww.
And finally,
okay.
Let the cliffhanger commence.
I'm so tense.
Gemini.
Gemini? Oh.
Wow.
Oh my gosh!
The war is important, sure, but that doesn't mean it's the only priority. You've got your own agenda, even if it's just as simple as looking after number one. Sometimes you've done things that others might consider dubious, but no one's perfect, right? You'll do what you must to protect your interests, like anyone else would.
Oh, Nick, we're in so much trouble.
I was just going to say, we're up against it, Becky.
Yeah, we are.
Never heard such kindred spirit speech.
So, Josh, as GM, I think this is very much going to be a game of two halves.
It does sound like it, yeah. Cool. And have you... So, Becky, you want to be a pilot. I've heard that loud and clear. Everyone has to choose a role. What roles were other people thinking of?
So, I'm going to go with science.
Science.
I'm thinking I'll take the tactician role. One day I'll play an engineer, one day.
I think I'm going investigator.
You're in trouble, Scorpio. Cool. So pilots, so all of these could be military or non-military, but pilot and tactician strongly smell of military. Investigator and scientists have no particular smell. So we could go for an all-military group quite easily, and that tends to draw people together. But equally, it can be fun to do a sort of military-civilian split. What are your thoughts?
Can you do military science? So I'm thinking he's a sort of biological scientist of some sort.
Cool. That works very well with the Korax.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like Korax kind of investigation. Surgery, that sort of thing.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you're doing anything remotely connected to the Korax, the military are going to be interested whether you are officially part of the military or not.
Yeah, so I suspect there's some private interest, but it's probably there's a big military influence. So for the, you know, broad brush, I'd say I'm in the military because it probably gives me the kind of credibility around the ship and such to access the areas I need.
Cool. What about you, Sue?
I was kind of curious to see what it's like to play civilian this time, but also I would just want to make it cohesive, you know, so I'm not completely wedded to that if it's easier for me to be sort of military.
I think given that there are three other military characters, if you're a non-military character, we'll need to come up with a sort of pretext for you to be very much around. Maybe you could be given the job of investigating something. Can't think what that could be.
I was sort of vaguely thinking, could I be a kind of like civilian liaison or something? So I have to sort of I prepare sort of almost like press releases, you know, like a civilian on the military side talking about all the awesome stuff that they're doing or something.
Like, as in effect, you're a journalist.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe more like PR or something.
Oh, so you're pro-military, or are you investigating the military?
I think I've been brought on as pro-military. Brought on the military ship.
I noticed that hair splitting, Sue. I noticed. I mean, the setting, the core setting in the book has two military ships, one of which has a civilian contingent on it, right?
Yeah, that's right. So in the canonical setting, Agamemnon is the massive battleship, and it had been spending some time fighting hit and run against the Korax, and then discovered the civilian fleet, which had been sat there with one military ship, much smaller than the Agamemnon, called the Hecate, I think, looking after the civilians. So there's a kind of, technically, the Hecate and Agamemnon are both military ships, but Hecate's been part of the civilian fleet for longer and has a different mindset.
Well, that sort of fits with my sort of public-private kind of thing, right? Maybe we're the sort of not the hardcore military ship. We're more of a kind of like a bit of a mix. Does that make sense? Or is it?
So this is a good question. Is are the military people stationed on Agamemnon or stationed on Hecate or a mix of both?
So what I'd been toying with was commanding a frigate, which in this case would probably be the Hecate. Assuming we're just using those two ships, like one of the things the Taurus does is throw themselves in harm's way to protect other people, which is maybe a risky move if you also have the civilian hierarchy on your ship.
Well, so we can easily say that the civilian hierarchy are kept on some other part of the civilian fleet. I don't think that'd be a problem. That makes sense to me for the reasons you've just given, essentially. Like, maybe originally they were on board Hecate, but now it makes sense. It's a smaller, more manoeuvrable ship. So actually putting yourself in harm's way is quite a logical thing to do with that ship, isn't it? Okay, cool. So you're the commander on the Hecate. That works.
But explicitly, just to be abundantly clear, not in command of the whole, not the lead military officer for the whole fleet, not the admiral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool. So if it works for everybody else, I think it would probably be easier if you're all based on either the Hecate or the civilian fleet as your primary locus of operations. And that leaves the Agamemnon there, but it's got its own culture and structure, and so it could be a help, or it could have elements of threat to it too.
That works for me. I'm very happy to be on the Hecate.
Yes, that's great.
Super. Right, that's enough of that. You will have to work out ranks at some point for those of you who are military. But in the meantime, should we just make up the characters? Your key decisions to make are, what's your stat line from those five stats I just mentioned? And I think you get plus zeros in most things, but you get one at plus one and one at plus at minus one, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep.
We've hit the limits of my prep here. I'd read a load of stuff, but I hadn't got any further than...
I mean, when you say prep, you wrote the game. Shouldn't it be deliberately marked into your mind?
I haven't played the game in a little while, and it's not seared into my brain, sadly.
I thought it would be like a Beatles album for the Beatles.
I mean, if you ask me to list all the moves, I can do it. But if you ask me tell you how they go, not so much. No, I'm not doing it. You need to choose name and appearance. You need to choose your stats. You need to choose your three moves, at least one of which must be a roll move. And then we'll do your relationship questions. So I suggest that everybody just whack through your moves decisions. If anybody would like to tell about some interesting, juicy move that you've got, you may do so. But I don't suggest we read out all of our moves. We can bring them up in as they come in, some earlier than others.
And just remind me, Josh, the moves that have asterisks next to them are XP-generating moves?
Yeah, good question. Okay, so these are what are called cardinal moves. So anything with an asterisk next to it is a cardinal move, and that means two things. Number one, every time you make that move, you get a point of XP. Number two, you cannot raise the pressure with it. So raise the pressure, I'll just real quickly explain. Everybody has a pressure track. It's got five boxes in it, and you can voluntarily mark boxes in your pressure track one for one to get a plus one bonus to a dice roll after you have made the dice roll. That's called raising the pressure. If all five of your pressure boxes get filled full, then you're no longer able to do that until you have taken some drastic action, which is called a breaking point action, to blow off the pressure, and then it resets to a lower level. But anyway, any move with an asterisk against it, cardinal moves, you cannot get that bonus. So once you've rolled the dice, that's it. You're stuck with what you've got. Although I think you can still use support and interfere, and you can use wait helplessly, which are two other ways to get a bonus to your rolls. I hope that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Becky, it looks like you and I are both taking a minus one in smooth.
Are we both taking a minus one in smooth? Well, what's the point of smooth?
Yeah.
You can't use that in a fight.
It's the best stat because... because it stops you getting into fights, for a start.
No, roar is the best stat. Obviously.
Roar.
This happened last time I played this playbook. Just this once, Josh, could I take maybe five moves?
Well, I exhort you to make lots of cardinal moves so you can get them really quickly.
Mash the XP button.
That's what I would do in your place, Nick, I assure you.
You didn't have to say that, Josh. Taking this route, that's the case. I'm sure there's a playbook in here that has specifically got a secret code for Josh to unlock to get maximum XP. Well, if everyone picks theirs, I've picked mine.
I can't decide between Maverick and Shotgun Diplomacy.
They both sound dangerous.
Yeah, I know.
I'm now looking those moves up.
I think I'm going to go Shotgun Diplomacy. I think it's more versatile. It'll make maximum use of my raw stat.
So the tough one for me is always, do I or do I not take the true love move?
Take the true love move. True love.
Does somebody want to be my true love?
Yes.
Requited or unrequited? Yes?
Yes. But the chain of command matters, so we can't be together.
Perfect. Yep. Love it. All right, let's answer that question.
Any of those three characters would have made an amazing true love.
Yeah.
Oh, if I'm going to be your true love, maybe you're going to take Maverick if you're my commanding officer.
All you have to do is mash that XP button and you can have both very quickly.
All right.
Are you going to have steamy locker room, sexy times, secret sexy times?
No, we can't.
We can't.
Be
we couldn't.
Together
we can't.
Because it's the chain of command. But we totally will.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I've just taken that next
all
step.
All restraint will break down at some important moment when it's probably dramatically appropriate and tactically terrible.
I'm putting it on session two.
Ooh, sweepstake.
Place bets now. I can't think of a good name, though. And I'm in that bad stage where you're thinking of a name and you're just licking around the table and you're seeing like random things and you're thinking, oh, should it be called Buttercat Bowl?
Lieutenant Buttercat Bowl to you, bucko.
Or like Marmite Scissors. It's hard.
There is a name sheet. Did you know that?
There is.
At the end of the reference sheets.
Oh, is there one at the end of the reference sheets? Jolly
thing
good.
With a ton of names and call signs.
I've already thought of a call sign, Josh.
Is it Marmite?
I thought of a call sign. I haven't thought of a name.
For some reason, I wanted to call myself Herman Merman. But I thought that was too close to the actual character.
People will be like, you can't be a real human. You're clearly Korax.
So I've gone for Trent Merman instead. Dr. Trent Merman.
I Googled a list of ship's captains, and I found a file that is apparently indexed to the Captain's Register of Lloyd's of London. Which just has thousands of ship captain names. Mm. Who I guess
should we link that in the show notes? Please?
Yeah, indexed to the captain's registers of Lloyd's of London.
I like that.
It covers the years 1869 to 1911. So you know, Becky, are you? So presumably the Hecate has a single small wing of fighters or something. Are you the CAG or are you?
God, I hope not. I don't think you want me to be your CAG. I would be a bad CAG. You want me to take over as CAG at some really, really terrible moment.
Perfect.
When I will clearly do a bad job. Or maybe a good job, who knows?
I'll read. Should we introduce characters?
Yes. Sure thing.
Should we do it in alphabetical order by first name? Ha ha ha.
That's me.
Yes.
Damn it. Okay, so I am playing Flight Lieutenant Emily Loris, also known by her callsign Hellcat. Emily Loris is incredibly short, but she can still reach the pedals in her cockpit. Don't worry, everybody. She is, I'm going to say she's 5'1", and she is small, but made of pure muscle. So incredibly strong and muscly, and she can usually be seen wandering around down on the flight deck, like wearing, I think that what they, the kind of the typical uniform that I'm imagining is like a boiler suit or a flight suit, but then she usually wears it like down at, like around her, tied around her waist with a just like a plain black vest underneath to show off her tattoos.
Are you like big or are you like wiry, hard, tough?
I'm wiry, tough. I'm small, but like you could
vicious
bounce a quarter off my
yeah, yeah,
abs.
Like just super hard, that kind of yeah. that muscle type,
that sort of thing. And I've got a shaved head because I'm in the military.
Do you have any distinguishing tattoos?
Yes, I have tattoos down both of my arms, and I'm just trying to work out what they should be. I think they're going to be like geometric patterns.
Is it like you've come up with a sleeve and done the whole sleeve, or is it like you can see that it's constructed over time?
I think that it was constructed over time, but you can't tell.
All right, so you spent a lot of time doing it.
Because it's geometric patterns, so it was able to match up quite nicely.
There's definitely an embarrassing tattoo underneath one of those tattoos.
There's 100% many regretful, embarrassing tattoos underneath those tattoos. But now they're kind of covered in these kind of hexagonal, shaded point work. Lots of negative space.
Do they have any cultural significance?
Yes, I think they probably should do. I'm just trying to think what that might be. I think she's an adherent of the Red Temple.
Ah.
So maybe there's some religious iconography in there, in the geometric patterns.
Ed.
Yeah, so I was going to go for a sort of Weasley character, but then with the smooth, I thought, okay, I'm going to change it. So I think my character's name is Dr. Toby Jaleel. He's a mixed race scientist. He's got a very smooth, calming manner about him. Like, I'm thinking like Jeff Goldblum. So he's got a kind of, like an immediate kind of soft charm to him. Like everything's going to be fine in his presence. Like everything slows down and is relaxing.
Are you playing Ian from Jurassic Park?
No, because he's like kind of cool and chaos theory guy, isn't he? This is...
Yes. There must be some equivalent for that for biology, though.
Chaos biology.
Yeah, chaos, exactly. Complexity.
No, I think because he's like nerdy cool. I think I'm just kind of nerdy, though. So, like, I pretty much always wear, like, whatever scientific outfit is.
Are you more like Taika Waititi than Jeff Goldblum?
Well, he's more wacky, isn't he?
That's true, actually. He's more wacky.
Yeah, like, imagine that you met those two people and then you met me and you'd be expecting something like that, but then was slightly disappointed because I'm more boring than that.
I see. So you're playing a boring character.
Slightly boring. But also, people like being around me because I've got a kind of calming presence.
And what do you look like?
Yeah, so I think I was going to go with wiry as well, but I like it. Maybe not. I think, okay, just to contrast with Jeff Goldblum, I don't think I'm that tall. Is that? I'm going to break from my norm and be a shorter character.
Two small characters? How will this work?
Ed, I know you're a good role player, but are you good enough to play a short person?
Maybe I should. I mean, I'm thinking sub 6 foot.
I'm wanting to hear, occasionally, I want you to say, I can't see.
Yeah, I can't reach that thing. Can you do it for me? Oh, the light bulb's gone. Can you change it for me, please? Story of my life.
That's just not how short people are. We just get a ladder.
That's not true.
No, you just ask a tall person. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
You've heard of old folks that tap me on the elbow and ask me to get things from shelves. I can count on at least a hand. Yeah, so I think he's average height. He's got piercing blue eyes. So I'm thinking this is where I'm mixing it up with the guy from Aliens, the corporate guy. So what's the name of the...
Burke.
Is it Burke, the corporate guy?
The one played by Paul Reiser?
Yes.
The baddie?
Baddie, yeah.
Yeah, he's a baddie,
yeah,
that's right.
I'm Scorpio. So I think I've got piercing blue eyes, just that's the giveaway. And I think I'm of modest height, like him. But I have the sort of calming tones of Jeff Goldblum.
Right, Nick, tell us your character.
So I'm playing Commander Samuel Buckley. Sam is probably the thing that he would prefer people call him. And he's played by the older, cragglier version of Daniel Craig. So you know the older Daniel Craig gets, the more he looks like a rock face. Mm-hmm. That's that version. And I'm gonna see your piercing blue eyes, Ed. with my own piercing blue eyes. It's Daniel Craig.
It's true.
Are you a Korax agent too?
So he's Ish Korean, I think. Also not particularly tall. So not a physically imposing, but not through height. We're in space. Everyone's short in space, right?
Turns out, yeah, we are.
Looks like it. Yeah.
Is that a gravity issue?
You've got to fit in those tiny cockpits. Yeah, so I picture him pretty much always being in a crisp but not fussy officer's uniform. So he's well turned out. You know the kind of dress where somebody looks smart but they don't look like they're worried about it? That's the kind of thing that's going on there. I don't know what color the uniforms are here for the off the flight deck.
But you can find that out by looking in the book.
Oh, okay.
Like we have a consistent uniform code.
They're the colour they are in the book.
So the command one, I'm looking at the Cancer illustration, which is a command one, is a kind of mostly black with flashes of blue, grey and orange on the shoulders in particular, shoulders and chest.
That's the colour of my uniform.
There you go.
Right there.
Sorry, this is completely stolen your thunder in describing your own character.
No, that's fine. It's although the uniform there, the central... I think it's got buttons. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit more jackety, but those kinds of colours, predominantly black with some orange and blue and silver. I think he's the kind of naval officer who maybe was always headed for command of a frigate, but never anything more than that. Like, this was always going to be his ceiling, and he was perfectly fine with that. I see that look, Josh.
Sue, would you like to introduce your character?
So I'm playing Sonia Vega. She's quite tall and slender with cropped blonde hair, green eyes, just quite a sort of masculine way of dressing. So she's got these long legs, always tends to wear like a trouser suit, but with a t-shirt underneath. So she looks cool. She's, you know, like, she's a cool lady. She also has a gold signet ring and apparently has a little finger missing on her left hand as well.
Ooh.
And the story of that seems to change depending on who you talk to.
Nice.
Yeah, so she's got these green eyes that can really hold your gaze. If you look at her, you find it quite hard to look away. She's got this quite penetrating stare. Carries herself very well. She's very confident. Can seem to get into places without too much hassle. Not by breaking in, just by looking as if she belongs there. Yeah, she's a stone cold legend, basically.
Nice. And she's currently working as a civilian liaison with the military.
Yes.
But she's a professional a journalist by profession.
Yeah.
Does she work for a particular outlet? I mean, either previously or perhaps in parallel with her civilian liaison role?
You'll have to remind me of the backstory. How long have we been in space? Would there have been time for a previous career?
Oh, well, I mean, like, it could easily be that you were en route to somewhere to do a story about something when the war broke out.
Okay.
And so you've ended up, you know, continuing your journalistic career on the fleet. Or if you prefer, not. But yeah, I'd know, not like massively long, I don't think. I'm thinking months.
I think she had private clients before this. I think she was a bit of a reputation launderer for high profile people.
Super. Yeah, like it. Cool. We have been playing Last Fleet by me, Josh Fox. If you'd like to find out more about Last Fleet, you can find links to the game in the show notes, along with all the rest of our stuff. See you next time.
Hang on a minute. Isn't it Nick's birthday?
It is.
Happy birthday, Nick!
We all said happy birthday already.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm so late.
Thank you.
I've been sewing scout badges on until my fingers bleed.
Scout?
Cub badges.
Selling them?
Sewing.
Oh, sewing. Okay, that makes more sense.
What did you think she said?
Selling.
Selling.
Running a black market on cub badges so that you could...
100%.
I mean, I bet you if we made little, like those joke ones, little role-playing badges.
I love the joke ones.
Like the critical hit badge.
I have got some, I've got a druid one and a natural 20 one that I need to sell in my rucksack.
Inappropriate seduction badge.
I don't think you want to sell that to cubs.
Not to cubs.
No, I've also got one that says Abraca fucking Dagbra.
Nice.
With like a wizard staff and a wizard's hat. But I just don't know if I want to have that much swearing on my rucksack. I haven't decided yet.
I got thrown out of cubs.
What, did you? What, really? That's quite amazing. What for?
Yep.
Selling counterfeit badges.
It's very exciting.
I've been told that what I should say when people ask me why did you get thrown out of cubs is because I set fire to Arcala.
Well, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
What's the real answer, though?
I don't actually honestly know. It was this. I was... I was very sick at the time, and we had a doctor who was utterly useless. And so every time we took little Nicholas to the doctor and said, he's sick, the doctor said, no, he's not, he's got mental problems.
Did you say he's sick, or did you say he's crook?
Oh, mate, he's crook. He's a bit crook.
He's crook.
Yeah. So I guess I was probably being disruptive or something, because, you know, I was not well, I guess. Anyway, they threw me out. The guy from Scouts came and had a special meeting with my parents to let my parents know that he thought this was wildly inappropriate and he'd be willing to promote me to Scouts without the usual whatever it is that you do at the end of Cubs. And we just went, yeah, nah.
I lasted 2 episodes of the Scouts before I realised it was pants.
I can beat both of you. I went to 1 episode of Beavers. I was invited to Beavers by a friend at school, and I went along to Beavers with my friend at school, and they said, right, well, we're playing football. And I was like, right, cool. And I never came back.
It's not the rules-based football either. It's like a violent kind of salute of the jugger game of football, isn't it, where you get punched by big kids.
I have no idea. I had so little interest in football. I'm not even sure whether I joined in.
I think they called it murder ball, actually.